Welcome to your deep dive. Today, we're tackling a really interesting property law case out of Washington State, Proctor v. Huntington from 2010. This one throws a bit of a curveball into our understanding of property lines and, you know, what happens when honest mistakes have really big consequences.
Absolutely. What makes Proctor v. Huntington so compelling is, well, how it forces us to grapple with a core tension in the law, the fundamental right to own and control your property versus the court's ability to ensure fairness, or what we call equity. When these two principles collide, as they definitely did here, it raises some crucial questions for you to consider about how the legal system actually works in practice.
Exactly. And the scenario at the heart of this case is something you can probably visualize. Imagine owning a substantial piece of land, maybe, you know, 30 acres, and your neighbors, through really no fault of their own, end up building a significant portion of their home right across your property line. That's basically the essence of what happened between Noel Proctor and his neighbors, the Huntingtons. The central question the Washington Supreme Court had to answer is whether the Huntingtons should be forced to tear down their structures, or if the court could instead order Proctor to sell them the small piece of land they mistakenly built on.
A very real-world problem with potentially devastating financial and emotional repercussions for everyone involved, as you can imagine. So in this situation, Noel Proctor owned a 30-acre plot of land. His neighbors, the Huntingtons, they owned the adjacent 27 acres. Now here's a critical point for you to note. The Huntingtons hired a surveyor to mark their property boundaries, and, well, that surveyor made a significant error.
A mistake that had some pretty dramatic consequences, yeah. Relying entirely on this incorrect survey, the Huntingtons went ahead and built their house, their garage, and even their, well, and they did so a considerable distance over the actual property line, about 400 feet, which amounted to a full acre of Proctor's land.
Precisely. And for quite some time, apparently, neither Mr. Proctor nor the Huntingtons were even aware that this error had occurred. It wasn't until later that the encroachment was discovered, which led Mr. Proctor to file a lawsuit. And he wasn't just asking them to, like, move a fence. He wanted the Huntingtons ejected from his property entirely.
You mean removing the house?
Removing the house, the garage, the well, everything.
Wow. But that's not how the trial court ultimately ruled.
Right.
Yeah. Right. Instead of ordering the Huntingtons to, you know, vacate and remove their buildings, the court made a rather interesting decision. It ordered Proctor to sell that one-acre portion of his land to the Huntingtons for $25,000. This figure, importantly, was determined to be the fair market value of that particular piece of land.
And the trial court's reasoning behind this decision is absolutely key for you to understand as a future legal professional. The court essentially reasoned that forcing the Huntingtons to tear down their home, garage, and well would result in an enormous financial burden estimated around $300,000 and would cause, well, significant emotional distress. Given these circumstances, the trial court concluded that such an outcome would be fundamentally inequitable.
Okay, so let's dig a little deeper into this. On one side, you have Mr. Proctor with his, you know, established property rights. On the other side, you have the Huntingtons, who made a genuine, albeit really costly, mistake and now face the potential loss of their entire home. So the central legal question that you should be focusing on here is, to what extent can a court, using its powers of equity, step in and override those strict property ownership rights in a situation like this?
Exactly. The court had to decide whether it could deny Mr. Proctor's request for an injunction that's a legal order compelling someone to do or refrain from doing something, in this case, you know, to remove the structures and instead compel him to sell the land. This is where a significant precedent comes into play. The Washington Supreme Court's 1968 decision in Arnold v. Milani. This case established a specific legal test that courts should use when considering such equitable relief in encroachment disputes.
All right, let's break down this Arnold v. Milani test. What are the specific conditions that the Huntingtons had to prove to convince the court that, you know, they shouldn't have to tear down their home and instead Mr. Proctor should be forced to sell them the land?
Okay, so the Arnold test sets out five distinct conditions, and it's crucial for you to remember that the encroaching party here, the Huntingtons, has the burden of proving all five of these by what's known as clear and convincing evidence. Now, this is a higher legal standard than the typical preponderance of the evidence. It's tougher to meet.
Okay, tougher standard. Got it.
Right. So the first condition is that the encroacher must have acted in good faith. This means they had to genuinely believe they were building on their own property and there was no intentional trespassing or, you know, knowing disregard of the actual property line.
That makes perfect sense. I mean, it's easy to see why a court would be far less inclined to offer equitable relief to someone who knowingly builds on someone else's land. What's the second element of this test that the Huntingtons had to satisfy?
The second element is that the harm caused to the landowner by the encroachment must be relatively slight compared to the entirety of their property. It's not enough that the landowner simply loses some land. The loss needs to be minimal in the context of their overall holdings.
Okay, so it's a matter of proportion, sort of. What's the third condition they had to meet?
The third part of the Arnold test requires that the landowner must still have ample remaining space to use and enjoy their property, even with the encroachment in place. The encroachment shouldn't substantially impair their ability to utilize their land for its intended purposes.
And the fourth condition. Given the specifics here, this likely involves the house and the well, right?
Exactly. The fourth element considers the practical feasibility, or really the impracticality, of moving the encroaching structure. In situations involving substantial buildings like a house and a well, relocating them is often simply not physically possible or economically viable. You just can't do it easily.
Right, yeah. You can't just pick up a house and move it a few hundred feet without incurring massive costs and just significant disruption. And finally, what's the fifth and final element of the Arnold test?
The final condition examines the disparity and hardship between forcing the removal of the encroachment and allowing it to remain. There has to be a tremendous difference and enormous disparity in the potential suffering and financial burden on the encroacher if they are forced to remove their structures compared to the relatively minor impact on the landowner if the encroachment is allowed to stay.
So the Huntingtons had this really high bar. They had to convince the court that their situation met all five of these very specific and demanding conditions to avoid being forced to tear down their home. Let's delve into how the Washington Supreme Court's majority opinion in that 5-4 decision actually applied this Arnold test to the specific facts of Proctor v. Huntington.
Right. So the majority of the Supreme Court ultimately agreed with the trial court and affirmed its decision, finding that the Arnold test had indeed been satisfied by the Huntingtons. They emphasized the fact that the Huntingtons had relied on a professional surveyor's error when marking their property lines, which the court took as strong evidence of their good faith. They weren't trying to pull a fast one.
You know, what about that element of slight harm to Mr. Proctor? Losing an entire acre doesn't immediately strike me as slight. How did they square that?
Yeah, that was a central point of contention, as you might imagine. It's a sticking point. However, the majority of the court considered the loss of 1 acre out of Mr. Proctor's total 30 acres to be minimal in the context of his entire property holding. They really focused on the relative size and the fact that, well, Mr. Proctor still retained a very substantial amount of land, 29 acres.
Okay, so it's a percentage thing in their view. And how did they address the ample space requirement?
Well, the court noted that Mr. Proctor's land was largely undeveloped forest. Therefore, while he did lose an acre, the majority reasoned that his ability to use and enjoy the vast majority of his property, the other 29 acres, was not significantly impaired by the encroachment. He still had plenty of forest left, basically.
And the impracticality of removal and the significant difference in hardship? I mean, those seem fairly obvious given the presence of a house, a garage, and a well, and that staggering $300,000 estimate for removal compared to the $25,000 fair market value of the land itself.
Exactly. The majority opinion really underscored the sheer impracticality of demolishing a family home and a functioning well. I mean, the financial burden on the Huntingtons, if they were forced to do so, was just exponentially greater than the financial loss Mr. Proctor would incur by selling that single acre at its fair market value. The majority's reasoning really leaned heavily on the principle of achieving fairness under these unique circumstances. In fact, they explicitly stated that courts must achieve fairness between parties, not mechanically enforce property rules.
Interesting phrasing.
Yeah. They viewed the ordered sale at fair market value not as an unjust judicial taking of Mr. Proctor's land, but as a balanced and equitable resolution given the specific facts and the application of the Arnold test. This really highlights a key aspect of equity in law, its role in mitigating the potential harshness of strict legal rules when applied to specific, sometimes difficult situations.
But as you pointed out earlier, this decision wasn't unanimous. It was 5-4. The dissenting justices had some quite strong arguments against the majority's opinion, didn't they?
Oh, they did indeed. The dissenting justices, with Justice Sanders writing the lead dissent, strongly disagreed with the majority's application of the Arnold test. They argued vehemently that the harm to Mr. Proctor was far from slight. In their view, losing a full acre of land, especially one that had potential for development, constituted a significant deprivation of his fundamental property rights. This raises a crucial question for you to consider. You know, at what point does a seemingly small encroachment become a significant infringement on property ownership?
That's a really important point. An acre is, well, it's a substantial piece of land, regardless of the total amount you initially owned, right?
Exactly. The dissent also challenged the majority's conclusion regarding ample space. They pointed out that the encroached acre wasn't just any old indistinguishable part of Mr. Proctor's property. It was specifically described as being uniquely suitable for development, relatively flat and elevated in an otherwise hilly area.
Ah, okay.
So, therefore, by losing this particular acre, the dissent argued that Mr. Proctor's future development options for his remaining property might have been significantly limited. This illustrates the importance of looking beyond just the total acreage and considering the specific characteristics and potential uses of the land in question. It's not just about quantity, but quality, too.
That adds a really important layer to this. It's not just about the sheer quantity of land lost, but also the specific qualities and potential future value of that particular piece.
Precisely. But perhaps the most significant concern raised by the dissenting justices was the potential for this ruling to undermine fundamental principles of property rights. They worried that the majority's decision could create a problematic precedent, effectively incentivizing encroachment by allowing those who mistakenly build on another's land to essentially buy it after the fact, particularly if they can demonstrate a significant hardship. Justice Sanders went so far as to characterize this outcome as judicial eminent domain, arguing that the court was essentially forcing Mr. Proctor to sell his land against his will, which really clashes with the traditional understanding of private property rights. This concept of eminent domain, for your understanding, refers to the government's power to take private property for public use, typically with just compensation. The dissent felt the court was acting in a similar way here, but for a private benefit, not a public one.
That's a really powerful term, judicial eminent domain. It really underscores the dissent's deep concern that the majority was maybe overstepping its judicial bounds and potentially eroding the sanctity of private ownership, which is, you know, a cornerstone of our legal system.
Mm-hmm.
They felt that the Arnold v. Milani test was intended to be a very narrow exception to the general rule of protecting property rights, and that it was being misapplied or maybe stretched too far in this particular case.
Absolutely. The dissent believed that the majority was prioritizing the balancing of hardships to such an extent that it was overshadowing the fundamental right of a landowner to control and possess their own property. They argued that the elements of the Arnold test, particularly the requirements of slight harm and ample space, were just not met by that high standard of clear and convincing evidence in the specific circumstances of Proctor v. Huntington. This raises a fundamental question for you to consider as you study property law. Where should the balance lie between protecting individual property rights and achieving equitable outcomes when unforeseen and messy circumstances arise?
So for you listening, especially if you're a law student, what are the key takeaways from Proctor v. Huntington? Why is this case considered so significant in the realm of property law? What should you really focus on?
Well, this case really highlights a notable trend in judicial thinking. The increasing willingness of courts to weigh practical outcomes and notions of fairness or equity against the strict and sometimes seemingly inflexible application of traditional property law principles. It demonstrates that courts are, perhaps more often now, looking at the real-world consequences of their decisions and trying to avoid outcomes that they perceive as unduly harsh or unfair, even when those outcomes might be technically permissible under a strict reading of property law.
But it also shines a light on that ongoing and often intense debate within the legal field about where to draw the line, doesn't it? How far can courts go in the name of achieving equity before they begin to erode those fundamental property rights that are so essential to our legal and economic systems?
Exactly. For you as future legal professionals, Proctor v. Huntington serves as a critical case study in how courts apply balancing tests and equitable principles in the context of property law. It vividly illustrates that even in an area as seemingly absolute as property ownership, the concept of fairness, when proven under a specific and rigorous legal framework like the Arnold criteria, can indeed override those absolute rights in certain very specific circumstances.
And I think it's crucial for you to remember and understand that high legal hurdle, the clear and convincing evidence standard. It's not enough for someone encroaching on property to simply claim hardship. They carry a significant burden of proof to convincingly demonstrate that they meet all five distinct prongs of that Arnold test. It's not automatic.
Absolutely. The court isn't just handing out exceptions to property rights arbitrarily, or shouldn't be. The very specific facts of each case, including, you know, the extent and nature of the encroachment, the characteristics of the affected land, and the relative hardships faced by both parties, all play a critical role in the court's decision-making process when considering equitable relief in these types of disputes.
So as we wrap up this deep dive into the complexities of Proctor v. Huntington, we kind of come back to that fundamental tension. The constant push and pull within property law between the robust protection of individual property rights and the judicial pursuit of equitable outcomes in the face of unforeseen property disputes.
And it leaves you with a crucial thought to consider, maybe mull over. Does the Proctor v. Huntington decision represent a necessary and perhaps even beneficial evolution of property law, allowing it to adapt to complex modern situations and prevent truly unjust outcomes? Or does it, as the dissenting justices powerfully argue, establish a potentially dangerous precedent that could ultimately undermine the security and certainty that private property owners rely upon? It's a complex question with no easy answers, and one that will likely continue to be debated in legal circles for a long time.
Definitely something important for you to keep thinking about as you continue your legal studies. And if you want to explore this further, maybe consider how the Arnold test might be applied in different factual scenarios, perhaps with different types of property, varying degrees of encroachment, or even how similar cases are decided in other states and jurisdictions. Thanks for joining us for this deep dive.